is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
All right, we continue on here. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and SeattleSports.com. Opening day 2 days away, Brock, and I got a little list. It's a sad list, unfortunately, but all names that should be familiar. They all share a little something in common.
Okay.
Brian Wu, Paul Sewald, Matt Brash, Gregory Santos, Brandon Williamson, Justin Topa. This list could go on, but these are current or very recent Mariners who are all going to start the year on the injured list for various reasons. Brian Wu, of course, the news coming out yesterday that he's got some elbow inflammation. Could have been a lot worse. It could have been, you know, structural damage or, you know, something with the ligaments.
Flexor bundle.
Could be. But as of right now, just similar to what Matt Brash had, right? Just shutting him down due to some inflammation. But man, that's just a few current and recent ex-Mariners. Yeah. That doesn't get into the rest of the league. And, you know, I'm not even counting guys like Robbie Ray, who I guess I should probably put on that list as well. It just however much we've talked about the need for pitching depth, it's not enough.
Nope, it never is. And the guy that's going to join us in an hour and a half, probably a perfect day for Jeff Passan to join us for the first time of beginning this entire season of every Tuesday of jumping on with us, and wrote a book about it, a best-selling book about it. It's phenomenal. I love watching pitching. I love watching my son pitch. I love watching young pitchers. I love watching high school pitchers. I love watching all of it, Salk. But at some point, you just kind of got to ask the question, like, is it sustainable? Are we just churning and burning through arms?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of places. Driveline, obviously, was at the epicenter of this, and still, you know, a lot of folks go and train and develop there, Salk. Do you realize there's a group called TREAD? TREAD, Tread Baseball.
Okay.
And this is mostly because, you know, my boy's getting into this stuff, and he's like, hey, check this thing out, because a lot of his older friends are doing it, and high school kids are utilizing this, and it's amazing. I mean, it's trainers that are virtual with you every day, and they take your biomechanics and they look at what you're doing. They do all this drill work and all these, and you just look, and it's all velo, right? I mean, it's all, I got from 82 to 92. I got from 92 to 96. It's largely all velo, 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 velo. And you just wonder, I certainly wonder, when that news came down with Wu yesterday, and we saw it with Brash when we were down there, like, this just, for these guys to throw as violently as they do, with the amount of force and power down the mound they do, is this just as sustainable? Or do you got to, as you said, hey man, this is just the way it is, so you better build 7, 8, 9, 10 arms within your starting rotation.
Both of those things can be true at the same time, to be honest with you. I don't think I need to choose between them. It might not be sustainable, and in the meantime, you better build all of those arms to be able to withstand it. I think obviously some of the guys who are max effort, whip-like motion, you tend to worry about them, but I go back to a guy like Mark Pryor, who blew out his arm and was never the same again, who had the easiest,
smoothest
most relaxed delivery I've ever seen. He always looked like he was playing catch at high 90s. You just don't know. This is unnatural movement that just seems to eventually get these guys. But the reality is, the last couple of years, they've had, the Mariners anyway, have had veterans in their rotation, and then young players that were nearly ready in the high minors. Kirby, Miller, Wu, Brash, all of those guys graduated and in one case became a reliever. Williamson was traded. Stout was traded. Now he's obviously back, but not the same player that he was, partially because of injury. And so, you know, you graduated, what, 6 plus Gilbert? If you look at that, 7 guys that you've placed into the major leagues, add now Hancock, you get to 8. 8. So, I mean, no one could be expected to have more depth than that.
You want to pay for Jordan Montgomery's out there? You want to pay for, you know, should you have paid $32 million for Blake Snell as insurance?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that, you know, just kind of the means you've got to develop, and this is the area that you do have to spend, and at times maybe even overspend a little bit because of just the fragility of this health?
No.
I mean, does it force you into thinking that way? Like, man, I really wish, or, you know, are they going to buzz Jordan Montgomery today and say, golly, you know, you played it right. Good for you. You waited till some arms got hurt. And, you know, there were reports earlier this week that numerous teams are out there and yada, yada, yada. I mean, do you feel like you've got to make that move? Because now, you know, as the late, great John Clayton used to say, one injury doesn't undo a team. It doesn't undo a position group.
Nor will this one. And quite frankly, it's pretty survivable, especially if he's back in May 1st, because you got a ton of off days in April and you can, you know, always skip a guy. And you could have Emerson Hancock maybe start three times and make it through May or make it to May.
One injury doesn't undo you. Now you are very fragile.
Mm-hmm.
Now besides Emerson Hancock, who's the next guy? Like, who legitimately would be
probably next? Austin Voth, right? Yeah. I mean, but they need him in the bullpen along with Trent Thornton, because it's both of the injuries to Santos and to Brash. So, I mean, those two guys are probably next. Maybe it's Levi Stout. I mean, they brought in Jonathan Diaz, who has started in the big leagues. He's not been particularly effective this spring, but, you know, that's the kind of guy where, you know, he's got some major league experience and maybe, you know, you can throw him out there. You could get through with some bullpen games. I mean, like, there are options, but none of them are ideal, certainly.
No, and by the way, when I brought up Tread Athletics, it sounded like a negative. It's not a negative. It's an amazing, amazing resource that works with a lot of guys all around the country. So there are amazing, amazing, you know, tools to use. So I hope that didn't come across as negative. But you do see just the wear and just the tear and just the force and just the power and everything that is required with the arm. And I'm assured, Salk, that behind the scenes, they're trying to figure out, okay, what was the cause of this for Brash and Wu? Right, it's inflammation, and that's a good thing. It's not a tear. It's not, you know, something structural. Is this just to throw your hands up, like, hey, you know, this is just what's going to happen? Or is there something maybe within the delivery? Is there something within the mechanics that we can say, hey, can we just slow this down a little bit, or you know, a little less force? Because this was, Wu was shut down last year for this exact same injury, right, for about 16 to 18 days, something like that. That he had the same kind of inflammation, calmed down, and went back out there and finished it. So, yeah, we knew this was coming. We knew that injuries, you just know that, period, end of story. You just now, it's not an if, it is a when it's going to happen. Two different guys. And thankfully for both of these two young studs, it's inflammation and it's not structural. And that is a little sigh of relief, I'm sure, for all those folks involved, especially those two individuals who are just trying to continue their awesome start to their career.
Well, and, you know, there were a couple other guys that they had kind of hanging around that they decided to trade or move on from in various ways, right? Di Sclafani was brought over in the Mitch Haniger deal, and then they ended up trading him to
Polanco.
Part of the Polanco deal, right? So there's another one that went away. I think Tommy Malone's not back. Maybe he's the type of guy you can find again. I know he's not little, but he's another one that you could bring back. There's the, what's the guy who started a couple of games or came in a couple of times? I'm blanking on his name, but they moved him also.
I think
this
they had 13. Did they run through 13 starting pitchers last year? I think you nailed all 13 of them.
I think I did.
I think you did. Just fairly
shocking. So yeah, I mean, like they've kind of traded away or moved on from a lot of those upper. You know, maybe it's Casey Lawrence, who's been around the big leagues a little bit and was up and down, had some decent starts this spring. I mean, they have human beings that can come in and start, but have they kind of reached the level
maybe Justin
where you're
Barnes? I heard Barnes, he was at the park yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, was that coincidence that he was there in the afternoon? Was he getting a little workout in? Were they working him out?
Yeah, I've seen my arm stretched out.
Got a pretty good screwball, I'm told. somebody suggested Easton McGee. Nope, he elected to go somewhere else. The name I was trying to come up with was Darren McCacken.
He went somewhere else.
So, yeah, I mean, like, that's a lot of dudes that have kind of been in and out. And, you know, now you kind of find yourself hopefully not in too big a hole, but certainly showing the risk of.
And by the way, a lot of those dudes, that was their choices, too. Right. A lot of those dudes looked at it and go, well, maybe I had great opportunity as they were developing these young arms. But with these studs here and these dudes, like,
that
I'm not
was
gonna
McGee.
Get it.
Yeah. He decided to go somewhere else. They let McCacken go. I don't know about Tommy Malone. I have to check that one. And then
did Shannon bring up Logan Evans to us? Was that somebody?
I don't know who that is. That's a name I don't
pitcher,
even know.
Right handed pitcher.
Whoa. That one's
the one
me.
When they gave up seven runs to the Padres in the prospect game the other day. That was
him.
And that
was
Yeah, there was a story before that about it's like somebody to watch.
Let's remember that. Apparently, he watched.
Taylor Dollard, he was still in AAA, I think.
Okay. I mean, like, that's sort of what you're talking about.
Ty Adcock.
All right. Anyway.
We got humans. That's good.
Just a quick Google of Tommy Malone says he's
6'2". I know.
He's a free agent. Oh,
he is.
Bring back Tommy Malone.
Oh. 6'2", Tommy Malone. Please.
Hey, don't forget, you can come on down to Hatback Bar and Grill Thursday for a live broadcast of Wyman and Bob 2 to 6 as we're celebrating, you know what, Brock? The start of the Mariners season.
Let's
Hatback
go.
Will be hosting pregame festivities all for all ages, and those begin 3 hours before first pitch. Food trucks, tailgating, games, and music, and more. For more info, visit hatback.com. All right. Coming up in 20 minutes, Joel Klatt, adamant that the Seahawks are in a bad spot. So adamant, in fact, that he said exactly what I wanted him to say. That's coming up in 20 after everything you need to know next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, the bad news yesterday. Brian Wu, it was announced, will start the season on the injured list after experiencing elbow inflammation. So the good news in here, the MRI was negative. It appears to be just inflammation for now rather than any torn ligaments or structural damage. Apparently he felt a little soreness in a throwing session, immediately shut it down. So he will take a week or 10 days off, then try to ramp back up after that. Now, of course, the bad news is Wu has had injuries before, including Tommy John surgery on that elbow just a couple of years ago. He threw more innings than expected last year, and they're really counting on him for this season. So Emerson Hancock's set to take a spot in the rotation, but that means that the depth has already been tested.
Yeah, just a matter of when. I mean, and I don't, that's not a Debbie Downer. That is not Mr. Negativity. It's just when you're dealing with the arm and the fragility of it, especially when you throw at the rate that these guys throw and have the talent they have. As you said, the positive is he has experienced this before. He went through it last season. This isn't one of those, well, maybe it's 7 to 10 days, and then maybe it's a month, and maybe it's 2 months. No, I think he's got a pretty good beat on this, a pretty good feel for his own elbow and how to get right. And let's hope that it is 7 to 10 days, and let's hope he's right by May 1st, right alongside Brash, right alongside Santos, right alongside some of these other ailing
all
arms.
Of a sudden, though, you know, what's good news there is also bad news, right? He's experienced this before. And so, you know, once it's happened, you hope it doesn't continue to. They did play last night, second to last exhibition game of the season. And, well, it was a lot like a lot of the other recent games. They won 4-1. Jorge Polanco stayed hot.
Here's the pitch. Swung on, crushed right field. This is hammered. It's on its way, and it's off the wall. Ty France will score. JP right behind him. The throw is cut off. Julio scampers to third. Jorge Polanco, a ringing two-run double, plants it off the wall. The Mariners, the first two runs tonight, it's 2-0 Mariners.
Yeah, that was all off of Dylan Cease as well. Big offensive nights for Polanco and Canzone, who had a triple. France had a good night. Bryce Miller went 3 2/3. It's pretty good, just a lot of runs. So a really nice final stretch here for the Mariners. One more to go today.
Here's the second thing you need to
know. Meanwhile, just up I-5, or the 5, as they would call it down there, Shohei Ohtani was meeting with the media in Los Angeles and explaining that he's innocent.
So I never bet on baseball or any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do it on my behalf. And I have never went through a bookmaker to bet on sports.
Well, that's a pretty clear and concise description of what he says happened. He believes he was a victim here.
Up until a couple of days ago, I didn't know that this was happening. Just to kind of just go over the result. In conclusion, Ipe has been stealing money from my account and has told lies.
Now, he did not take any follow-up questions, so we don't know how that went down, how he had access to the account, and that part is still a little sketchy. But, man, that's a pretty strong denial.
It is. And, gosh, I think it was Lisa Guerrero somehow popped up on my Twitter last night and saying, you know, I was married to pro athletes. I've been around it my whole life. And, you know, it is not insane for them to lose millions of dollars, for them to just see money come and go and not know where it is. I was reminded of Drew Bledsoe way back when, after he got drafted by Washington State. His brother would say, I'd look in his drawer and he'd have like these huge checks. Like, what are you doing? Like, go cash this check. Ricky Henderson, right? Famed of printing or putting it in
Manny Ramirez,
in a frame. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really, I know that sounds insane to people. It sounds illogical.
But the access to the account is still.
Well, I mean, you get numbers today, you get wiring done, you get all that stuff done. In some ways, like back in the day before all this stuff was digital. I don't know, Saul.
Now, when you do a wire transfer of that size, there's a lot of steps you got to go through. So
there sure can
I am
be.
Very curious to see how all of that goes down. By the way, here's another gaming story. Remember, gaming is now really inexorably linked with sports around the country, and so probably shouldn't be surprised these keep popping up. Now it's Raptors forward Jonte Porter, who apparently has been involved with some suspicious activity. In this case, it's prop bets that were made on the under in three different games, where he went way under and in some cases left due to injuries or illness, causing all of those bets to hit. Yes, that name should be familiar. Brother of Michael Porter Jr. You may remember that the two brothers came to Seattle. Some sketchiness ensued with how the family was here and we're going to go to UW and ended up at Missouri. So we will see where that one goes as well.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Are we in all the changes now, Brock, in the NFL with their rule changes? And the big controversial one is the hip drop tackle. People are very upset. I heard, you know, Bob kind of upset about it yesterday. I know Robert Griffin III was upset about it. I know a lot of the safeties were
upset.
Wyman upset about it. So I had a question for you.
Yes. Yeah.
How many times was the hip drop tackle used last year?
Whew, good question. Do you have the number in front of you?
I do. It was about 222, I believe it was. Right. It was in the 220s.
Yep.
How many games were played in the NFL last year, not including playoffs?
Yep.
272.
Yep.
So this happens less than once per game.
Right.
I understand that. Good thing
but
to
I
get rid
the
of.
The issue is that how the refs are going to call it now
Correct.
That it's a rule?
Correct.
Maybe. But this idea of like, oh, there's no way to tackle anymore. Like,
correct.
Well,
see, I would
this
flip
was
that
less
around.
Than once a game.
Yes. So I would flip that around and say, please don't legislate something that happens less than once a game.
But
and
they did say they were about 30 injuries or more that came from it.
And out of those 270, were 10 of them intentional? I mean, were 50 of them intentional? Because I think most of the time it's guys that are running full speed that just, you know, try to grab anything to hang on. Like, how many of those had the intent to actually tackle and now I'm on a hip drop and I'm going to try to break his leg?
Yeah, but as they'll say in hockey, Brock, and we've talked about this before, the onus is on you. It doesn't matter if it's intentional. The onus is on you to make sure that the other people don't get hurt. I have no problems with this at all. Mm. Doesn't seem like it's a major
concern.
Well,
unlike me and Wyman, you've never had to tackle people for a living.
Oh, okay. Like you and Wyman. That's how I always describe
both of
you. A
couple of those interceptions I threw, Saul. It was dangerous to try to tackle those guys.
Kraken calling up some of their youth tonight. Logan Morris and Ryan Winterton both going to make their debuts against Anaheim. Winterton, a good prospect, so should be interesting. No Shane Wright, of course.
No Shane Wright
still. No Shane Wright. He's no one knows where Shane is. Poor Shane. It's been lost. All right, that's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. All right, Joel Klatt, Brock. I mean, just music to my ears yesterday. He was a little out of control, but he did say one thing that I've been waiting for somebody to say for what feels like forever. You'll hear it next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, I've got a Mike Salk insufferability alert for everybody out there because I may become insufferable at some point in the next 15 minutes. It happens. What can I tell you? Sometimes I'm insufferable, and this is going to be one of those topics that could certainly lead to that, Brock, so it's kind of where we're at. All right. So Joel Klatt joined us yesterday and we were asking him about quarterbacks, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it kind of led him, Brock, to a familiar place for many of us. We were asking, questioning Sam Howell. Who is this guy? By the way, he's going to join us at this time tomorrow. We'll get to meet Sam Howell and chat with him and learn a little bit about him. But we asked Joel Klatt, how good could he be?
You know, at some point you got to close your eyes and picture the confetti falling and think to yourself, like, is that the type of guy that I could see, you know, with a Lombardi trophy in his right hand?
And he goes on to say, no, good quarterback, interesting future. He doesn't see him as one of those guys. All right, so what about Geno?
Yes, exactly, verbatim.
Yeah, so kind of the same
Seahawks
thing.
The Seahawks are not a Super Bowl contender right now. They're just not. And because they don't have the requisite quarterback play to do that. They just don't. And it's one thing you could say, like, well, Joel Russell wasn't that when they won the Super Bowl. And to some extent, yes, that's true. But also, think of how cheap Russell was and the roster that they had around him. Think of how dominant the Denver defense was in Super Bowl 50 and the roster they had around an aging Peyton Manning, okay? Seattle doesn't have that right now. They don't have the roster around an average quarterback to say to themselves, yeah, absolutely, we can go and compete with San Francisco. You're not even the best team in your own division.
Yeah, and there's an interesting case to be made that you're the third team in your division, or maybe even the fourth if Arizona continues to improve with all the draft capital they have and all the free agent money that they had, etc. So he makes a pretty clear argument and goes on to say the Seahawks are in purgatory. And here's a little bit more from Joel Klatt.
So at that, like, no, these quarterbacks are not the answer. They are placeholders. And until that is fixed or the roster is completely overhauled to be a roster that can compete with San Francisco toe-to-toe, then, you know, then they're just playing out the string.
How many QBs, and he prefaced that and or added some insight and said, I know this is an incredibly high bar, you know, to close your eyes and visualize how many guys can lift Lombardi Trophy with confetti. I mean, how many of those guys legitimately are there in the NFL?
Eight.
I mean, is Brock Purdy one of those guys? Because he was a player too.
No, but he's saying there is another way to win with an average quarterback and a roster that is so special that it overcomes that. And
San Francisco, you don't spend too much money on the quarterback.
That's right.
So you can spend it on a lot of other places.
Right. I mean, Brock Purdy's free essentially, and so they've gone. They're so good everywhere else that he would say, okay, that's another way to build it. That's maybe even more challenging and very rare.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there's like 8, 10, something like that, right, that you could potentially see hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. And in his opinion, neither of the quarterbacks currently on the Seahawks roster are in that group.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger question there is, are they truly in purgatory? Are they truly a team that's not good enough to compete for a championship, but not bad enough to get to the top of the draft? And I think I would have to say, yes, that is what they seem like. Right? Maybe not with, I don't know if I'd say it with as much conviction as Joel did yesterday, but yeah, they're not a bad team, I don't think, but they're probably, as I said, the second or third best team in their division. They might end up being the fourth best team in what could be a very good division. So they're not a championship contender, not right now. And are they really a bad team? No. And they seem to be making moves designed to improve them incrementally. So what are they?
Yeah.
If not stuck somewhere in between.
Yeah, I think they're a lot of the NFL teams. I think they fit right there in a league that is really built to have this kind of competitive balance, right? To that, this isn't baseball. This isn't the NBA. This isn't the NHL. I don't know as much about that final one, but I certainly know enough of the others. This league is built to have kind of everybody in the middle. In many ways, the way the constraints are on scheduling, the way the constraints are on the draft, the way that you have a hard salary cap, the way that you have these numbers to kind of put everybody seemingly in the middle, and then let's see who can chase an edge. Let's see who can find something in the margins. Let's see who can take Mr. Irrelevant and develop him into a Super Bowl caliber quarterback.
I don't think they see it that way, though.
Let's see who can find a really cheap quarterback and then develop a roster. Let's see who can pay a really expensive quarterback and then make all the moves that you've got to make, like they're doing in Kansas City, trading away Ladarius Sneed and everything else that you've got to do to be able to pay, well, just a few of the very top at the very top of the food chain and make the rest of the parts work. I mean, this is the way that Roger and Park Avenue in New York loves this league.
It is, but it's your job to get out of what they want.
Okay.
Right? So it's your job to break free of that and become one of the teams at the top. That's the goal.
It sure is. And they did it originally, and they were one of those teams that had that kind of roster because of draft and development in the early phase of it.
So how do you get back to it, Brock? How do you get to that point if we can agree that they're really not on either extreme right now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're going about that with the way they've set up a lot of these contracts for this year and into next year. How many anchors into a very large salary cap do they have? How many guys do they have locked in there where you're like, oh man, you now are kind of just stuck here for a bunch of years?
None.
I mean, so I think that they kind of realize
that. I don't think
they
have a single deal on the team that goes beyond 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, Leonard, obviously, with his new deal, is going to be making some money. Geno's on a year-to-year contract. Sam makes no money, right? It'll be in, you know, you got him for 2 years. You know, DK is a guy that makes significant money.
I think that's just 3 years.
Mm-hmm. So you have not, you know, linked and inked these deals that just are like, okay, well, can't really build a roster that way because we got no salary cap space. You're kind of finally getting out of all the Russell Wilson dead cap and the Jamal dead cap after this season. And right, I mean, you kind of move all that stuff aside and you get really, really healthy in your checks and balances and in your finances. And we get a real chance to evaluate these first and second year players, Salk, that we think are pretty good. Right. I mean, I'll go back to that in 2010 and 2011, 7-9, 7-9. But felt like, man, there's some good players like Richard and Cam and Earl and KJ and Bobby, where Bobby comes in 2012. Like, there's some good young core nucleus here that we can really build around. And, you know, I've certainly had those vibes at times with Woolen. I absolutely got those vibes with Witherspoon. There are times at K9 and some of these young players. Now, Jackson's got to take a huge step forward. Like, your draft guys, your top round guys got to be difference makers. Derek's got to take a big step forward. Seen flashes from Boye. He's got to take a big step forward. Like, this new coaching, this new teaching, this new leading has got to take those crop of first and second year players who, by all accounts around the league, have said, ooh, I kind of like some of those young people in Seattle. Ooh, they got some people to work with, and they may have one of the better, just dynamic defensive players in this Devin Witherspoon kid that just was electric when he was on the field last year. Those guys got to do what KJ and Sherm and Cam and that crew did back the first time around.
And maybe it's just hard to envision because of the way the last couple of years have gone, where it's been just kind of, you know,
ho-hum.
Mets, right? Just kind of okay, nothing really spectacular. I don't know whether the nucleus you're talking about is truly the nucleus of a championship contender. I don't know that this feels like it did with Cam and Richard and Earl and Marshawn and, you know, kind of the rest of that group as they were all coming through. I don't know whether this feels like that. I got to tell you, not saying it feels bad, but I don't know if it feels like that. It feels like you got a couple, but maybe not enough, which is why you're talking about them as being sort of in purgatory. So how do you get out of it? Do you go towards the bottom? Do you go towards the top? You need resources, which is why, you know, everyone knows my pet theory, which I've said a million times here, is if you're not going to contend in the next year or maybe two necessarily, how are you going to get the resources you need? Well, DK Metcalf's the guy on your team who can bring back the most in terms of resources. Ask Joel Klatt about it.
There has not been a Super Bowl champion that has won the Super Bowl because their best offensive player is a wide receiver.
Yeah, it's never happened.
That has never happened. So this idea that all these wide receivers hold their organizations hostage for massive contracts, it blows my mind. It blows my mind. They are the most dependent position on the field, Brock.
Joel,
they
get after him.
They can't do anything
get
unless
after
everybody
him.
Else does their job.
Thank you.
I can't stand it.
Thank what you.
Great. You've got DK Metcalf. Good for you.
Thank you.
What does that do for you?
You've got DK Metcalf. Good for you. What does that even do for you, he says.
I was trying to figure out who that other, Maura, Justin, who was that other voice that was agreeing that was leading the witness?
Just cackling
that was,
away.
That was encouraging.
Yeah.
That
was just it was the boring. Muppets in the peanut gallery.
Somebody. I don't know who it was. Must have been somebody very smart.
Is this why you prefaced the segment?
I'm just glad you and Joel could come together at the end after all of this strife.
After all of the fighting and all of the
How did
meanness.
You preface the segment? What did you say? What
Mike Salk insufferability alert. Here you go. Because Joel couldn't be more right about that. I saw some people saying Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice was probably the best offensive player on that team. Yep. But Joel, listen to what he said. A team that won the Super Bowl because their best offensive player was a wide receiver. Yeah, nope. I don't think they won because Jerry Rice was such a good wide receiver. I think they won for a lot of other reasons. And also, that's a completely different generation without the salary cap and everything else that comes with the way the game is played now. I'm sorry.
Yep.
It just, I think the position is overrated. Well, I always have.
And even if you did point to Jerry Rice, and maybe there is an argument that you can make, he was that dominant, certainly on the big stages and playoff games and Super Bowls. You're going back to the 80s.
Right.
I mean, that's
more. And they had Joe freaking Montana and Steve Young, two Hall of Famers at quarterback.
I don't think Bumpus was alive. I don't think Lefko was alive. I don't think Stacy Rost was alive. I don't think Mora was alive. Like, you're going back a lot of years to find a reference or to, you know, an argument there that just, yeah, it is a dependent position. It is dependent on an offensive line. It is dependent upon a quarterback. It's dependent upon relationship. And again, to go back to what this league does and the different models and how hard they make it, what did Kansas City say? What did Kansas City say? Tyreek Hill, move on. God bless you, but we can't do it. Like, if we're going to sustain and we're going to win multiple Super Bowls and we're going to stay at this level and we're going to somehow put a roster around Patrick Mahomes and be able to pay Chris Jones and a few of the other key, Kelsey, a couple key pieces, then we've got to make these hard decisions. And we've got to find guys in the second and third and the fourth round that will grow up around Patrick. And then when they get really good, guess what? They're going to probably get paid elsewhere too. So very much a dependent position that, yeah, I don't, do you feel like, Salk, that it, you know, there's people out there all over, like, just can't stand that, or they don't want to, like, emotion, because of the emotion of
it. Yeah, because they think it's about hatred. They think it's like, I have some vendetta against DK Metcalf, who I love, who's a blast to watch. He's seriously one of the most
talented player. Yes.
But I just think the position is, unfortunately, it's sort of a three-part argument. You're in between. You're in that purgatory that Joel talks about. You don't have a clear path to a Super Bowl right now. You have very few guys that are tradable assets that are worth a tremendous amount. And the one you have plays a position that I think is overrated. This isn't about him. It's about roster construction. That's what it's always about and always been about. And so, I don't think they're going to do it. Maybe the time has kind of come and gone. I don't know. But I just, I keep coming back to the fact that you don't want to be in NFL purgatory. You don't want to be in the middle.
Yeah, I would say, and I would come back and say that the clearest, cleanest, best path forward, and really maybe the only path forward, is that your young people have to take a step from good to great.
Mm-hmm.
Your young difference makers who have shown in this league, Salk, that they can be up there and be viable for rookie of the year, player of the year, as young players, right? Have produced as young players. They've got to go from good to great. They got to do what Cam, who flashed, right, behind Lawyer Malloy and everything else, and all of a sudden went, whoa, this guy's not just good. This guy's dominant. Richard Sherman, who went in there and flashed when Trufant got hurt, whoa, this guy's good. Wow, he became dominant. Right. Then you trade for Marshawn, right? And you bring him into the fold. But then there's a little young Russell Wilson running around who's just a dynamic and brings a different kind of skill set. But your young players, KJ went from being a good Will linebacker to a great and a sack master. And now Coach K himself. Those guys took those steps.
Then you better hope Boye Mafe is unbelievable next year. You better hope that there are some guys that are going to take
leaps. They've been good. Boye had a sack in 8 straight games. He's good.
But it didn't. Has it ever seemed like he's going to turn into? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe
that's what I'm saying.
Into.
I mean, he's got to take new coaching, Salk. New set of eyes. This is the path. Okay. And you could say, well, it's a long shot. I don't see it.
I think that's a long shot.
That's fine. But that is, to me, the path. Ken Walker's got to become a 1,500-yard back. Devin Witherspoon's got to go from, playing.
Your path is essentially by asking guys to do something they've never done before.
Are you sure that they can't go from good to great? I mean, Richard Sherman had never done that before. Richard Sherman was nearly booted out of Stanford. Richard Sherman had all these issues. Cam Chancellor was a 230-pound safety that the league had not seen. He can't play safety.
I'd seen him in the NFL already look like he was on his way to being unique and different and potentially great.
When they were 7-9 and 7-9.
Talking about
when
now,
they were 7-9 and 7-9, you
even,
saw all
even
that.
Even at that time, I think we saw that they had some unbelievable talent. Yeah. Guys that were capable of greatness if they got the right quarterback, etc. Yeah, I think so.
Okay, and you don't think you've seen unbelievable talent out of Charles Cross?
That 7-9 team won more playoff games than the recent Seahawks teams have.
You don't think you've seen unbelievable talent out of Charles Cross?
No.
Who's taken Myles Garrett and put him in a bag and handled him all game long?
I don't think I have.
All right.
No.
Well, that's
do you?
I've seen a lot of good. I've seen a lot of good out of K-9. I've seen a lot of good out of Spoon. I've seen a lot of good out of Woolen. I've seen a lot of good out of Cross. I've seen a lot of good out of those guys, Salk. It's why when they were supposed to be horrible, they ended up going to the playoffs. They're supposed to be terrible. Well, that rookie class said, no, we're not. We're not this bad. I've seen Boye Mafe have 8 straight games with sacks. It's hard to do in this league, really hard to do. So I've seen some good. But this staff and this new group and this new scheme and new all of it needs to take it from good to great.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, three good football questions with Brock, Blue 88 every day at this time. Brock, what's going on with the number two pick? I thought all this was supposed to be pretty much set in stone.
Yeah, right?
Jay now Daniels.
Jay Daniels to Washington, right?
Right.
Or Drake May. You know, Ron Wolf's son is there running the show now in Washington. And you know what Ron Wolf liked back in the 80s and 90s? 6'5", quarterbacks, rocket arms, and all the traits. You know what a defense coordinator, head coach may like? Somebody that can take care of the football. Somebody on third downs, as Joel said, who's extraordinary. Somebody that wins and in every big moment seems to make those defining plays and isn't, well, a stat monger, but not a winner like Jaden Daniels, have been multiple places. Isn't like Drake May, where he never elevated North Carolina. It was awesome in spots, but was not the guy to elevate him. JJ was right at the center of elevating him. Tom Pelissero, yesterday from those owners' meetings, sitting there with Rappaport and his other guys. Now, this is what old Pelissero's hearing.
Really interesting, because everybody's always trying to figure out, especially at the top of the graph, what the other teams are doing. When I've had conversations here with executives for other teams who know Adam Peters well, know the situation well, the most popular answer for what they do at number two is J.J. McCarthy.
Hmm.
Wowzers. Wowzers.
Remember he was going to be like a second-round pick?
Yeah, I seem to remember this with some quarterbacks over the years. I think Baker Mayfield in December started out as a second-round pick and became the number one pick in the draft when it was all said and done. Because winning does matter, and being creative does matter. In today's NFL, Salk, you know, being able to win on third down and in the red zone and being able to take care of the football, those things do matter. And for a Dan Quinn who's in charge of that thing, this time around says, hey, man, character is going to be at the absolute epitome of what I want. I want a foundational piece here. Mm-hmm. I can work with some of it, but this dude better be able to run. He better be able to create. He better be able to make it difficult. And oh, all the while, he better have got some production and some winning underneath his belt. I can see and make the argument why this narrative's starting to go that way for JJ at number two.
All right, question number two.
Makes my sister
Speaking of Washington puke, quarterbacks, Robert.
Makes my sister-in-law puke.
Okay, thank you. Robert Griffin III. Kind of an interesting take here. I wanted to get your perspective on this.
So Deion saying that either Shadur or Travis Hunter should pull are going to pull an Eli doesn't surprise me at all. Look at what's happened this year. Caleb Williams goes to the combine, doesn't do anything except for meetings, doesn't even let the medical teams go out there and look at him because he says they don't need to. Marvin Harrison Jr. doesn't do his pro day, doesn't do the combine, doesn't run a 40 because they don't need to. In today's age with the athletes and their mindset, they are empowered. They know that they can control their own narratives. They know that they can be a part of the media while they're still playing. So if the players that are coming up are saying these things and feel this type of way, you're going to see more of them pull an Eli and say, I understand that playing in the NFL is a privilege, but that privilege is earned through my play. And the players right now understand that they don't have to do the status quo.
Ooh, this is a long conversation here. So
it is.
I feel like I'm going to run out of room with this bed for Blue 88 because that took up a lot of it. The players are part of the media now? Did he say that? The players are part of the media now. So they, I think what he's saying is players can try to control the message.
Right.
And he's right. In certain markets, in certain places, you can try to control some of that. But to use Marvin Harrison and Caleb Williams, those are two unicorns. To use those guys is like, oh, yeah, this is the norm. And maybe Travis Hunter fits in that mold. He's an unbelievable player. I got to see a lot more out of Shadur Sanders than 4-8 and 52 sacks last year and melting down at the end of the year. Like, come on now, hold on a second. Like, Caleb won a Heisman. Caleb was extraordinary. Caleb runs a 4-4. I mean, he just got some gifts, as does Marvin Harrison, that are unique, that put them in a class where they have that kind of ability, that kind of leverage. This comes down to leverage, right? And that's what we're talking about. Does the employee have the leverage? Does the player have the leverage? Or does the ownership and the employer in the league have the leverage? Very few guys can leverage that league. I don't know. I don't think we're going to see... RG3 does. Thinks we're going to see a big swell of all this leverage is going to fall on the players. I tend to fall on the line of supply and demand. a lot more players out there that just simply want to play and don't have those unicorn kind of traits. I'm
very curious, man, because you talked to like Mike Florio, who will tell you that.
Well, we've been waiting on this for 20 years for Mike Florio.
Well,
we've been talking about this.
Florio thinks the draft
years.
Is illegal, that it should go away, that it's, you know, it's not right.
Yep.
It's an interesting conversation. Question number three. Hey, since you're already heated, Brock, what's going on with high school sports?
Oh my gosh. I sent you guys a little deal last night. 12-team league that's going to be put out there in the spring around the country to create NIL money for high school kids. And one of the teams is in Denver, Colorado, and happen to know the guy that's been asked to coach that and everything else. And I'm like, well, hold on a second. What about all the guys that play baseball? From all the guys who play track, what about all the high school kids? Like, what are they going to do? And oh, by the way, these kids from Colorado are going to go play Florida and Texas and Cali, like the top kids out of there. And you're going to get how much time to practice some pads and get them ready to play? What? And what kind of risk are they going to take? And I mean, I just, it's, well, they get to make money, Salk. Right? There's going to be some NIL pools. There's going to be some money out there thrown together for these kids to showcase them so they can go somehow, you know, not be high school kids anymore, but let's go be semi-pro, I guess, kind of college kids and get us ready for college and get all of our name, all of our exposure, and all of our money in our pocket for high school kids. I'm just waiting for the middle school football to start next.
Why is there money available for NIL for that? I mean, who's paying for that?
I don't know.
Where's the money come from?
Good question.
Well, that's a pretty important one. I mean, like, I know where the money comes from in college.
Sure.
Because there's a tremendous amount of money in the college game. Where's the money come from for the high school kids? Who's paying it?
That's a good question.
That seems like the type of thing that's promised to a desperate parent, but never actually gets delivered. My guess is this thing goes away very quickly because I just don't see where the money's coming from.
I understand there's some hedge fund money. There's some capital out there with some groups that, you know, want to get this thing started, that do think that there's a market that eventually can get televised, that these are, if you can get all the four stars and all these big names and you get somebody to put that on television, but
I don't know, man. There's something something doesn't smell quite right there. I'm sorry. That is today's Blue 88. A lot of text messages here. Wow. Trade wide receiver one. Ridiculous East Coast bullcrap. All right. It's a very East Coast thought, apparently. Let's see. Marvin Harrison Jr.'s gifts are who his dad is. If his name is John Smith, he's wide receiver two in this draft. I don't know about that. Let's see. Leave it to the anti-Russ show to completely undervalue Russ. That's us, Brock. We're the anti-Russ show. In those Super Bowl years, he was a huge part of our Super Bowl success. He has records for game winners, multiple other records for 6 years. Get real, guys.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a shame how we were so just piling on hating him during all of that time. It's really awful. RG3 is correct. Owners shouldn't have leverage. If you're talented, play your cards, own your worth. I'm pro player on that. I'm pro player on this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm torn on that one, man, because I do love the way teams get built, and I think that is always part of the fun of sports. But I do feel for players, and I do think the draft, in theory, is kind of a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Just from, like, there's no other job like that, right, where you get drafted into the company and the city that you're going to have to go live in. In other jobs, you choose who gives you the best offer, but you don't get to do that in sports. It's a little funky. All right, coming up, Brock, I read something this morning from Tim Britton, who's a writer for The Athletic. He's a baseball writer. He did what must have taken, something must have taken him forever, this project, but it is, I can't even really describe it to you. Just stick around, and I'll tell you how it relates to the Mariners and their upcoming season and their pathway to a World Series. It's next on Brock and Salk.